Hey everyone, we're live, pal. Hang on here. I think I see somebody who I'm not sure if this is the real guy or not. Is this Andrew Zarian, the man who I haven't seen in a couple weeks here? What's going on?
Oh my gosh. It is me. I'm back. Listen, this was too long of a break. I get all the criticism. I heard it all. You know what? You guys are absolutely freaking right. I had no control over this. It was terrible. I do sound a much. Yeah, but you know, it was a number of things. John is here also, our producer. I had a bunch of work stuff that I could not get out of. Garrett knows a lot about this.
Yeah, this is real life, man.
I filled
this
him
is,
in.
This is we do the show because we love doing it. For first and foremost, yeah. You know, Tony Leader put us together with Denise originally because he thought it would be entertaining for the channel, and it is. And I think I get more out of it doing it with you than anything else, just because you know we've become such good friends. But
same.
We both have day jobs, right? Like, and when the day job calls, it's kind of hard to work around. So I'm just glad you're back.
I have a fantastic situation with my day job. I deeply appreciate my gig. It's you know, sometimes you think about like what work is, and then like what my father's version of work was of 80, 90 hours a week being a mechanic. Yeah. You know, rebuilding rack and pinions and axles. And then my version of, you know, a full week, it's I'm very lucky to be in a position. But sometimes, you know, I can't get out of it. And the last couple of weeks was that. And then I came down with terrible upper respiratory infection, sinus infection, God. And led into pneumonia. So it's my voice is still not great. It was rough the last week and a half.
I'm just glad it's not the 17th time that you've gotten COVID.
Listen, I would have preferred to get the vid once more because COVID was luckily for me, you know, knock on wood, it was a much easier process. Yeah. It was not tough for me compared to, you know, what I dealt with the last week.
So this week is Thanksgiving week, which we get to spend some time with our families. What is the Zarian tradition here? What is the Zarian family tradition for this week?
Oh, man. So we host. My wife and I host Thanksgiving every year. We probably have like 23 people coming. And then we become, you know, we just open our doors. Friends end up coming. My Thanksgiving starts at 2 and it doesn't end till like 2:30 in the morning.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
So everybody just hangs out and they drink and it becomes like a big thing here. So I guess that's the tradition. It's always a big party here.
And is there a family dish that is specific to the Zarians? Do you guys have just normal sort of Thanksgiving fare? Or is there a little twist here?
There's always a twist, right? Like, let me ask you, do you make, like, we have heavy Italian food influence because of my wife's side, heavy Spanish influence from my wife's side.
By the way, I make a happy birthday to one Jessica Zarian.
Yes, it was Jess's birthday on Friday. She got a ton of happy birthday from the viewers, too, which was fantastic. John Alba sent a great happy birthday to his wife, which is hysterical. You know, like I make a spinach pie for, you know, representing my Greek side. And I make that every year for the, you know, for everybody.
Wow, that's very interesting for my side. So my mom, we used to do Thanksgiving at my mom's. And even last year we went out to Arizona because my parents moved out to Arizona. Gosh, they've only been out there now for maybe about 5 years, 6 years. So we're having it here, but it's not, it doesn't have like my mom's flair, which is, it's traditional Thanksgiving, but she's also Japanese. So instead of mashed potatoes, we would have rice with gravy on it.
Nice.
Which is delicious, by the way. But we're hosting it. My ex-wife and her significant other and my kids will be here with me and my wife and my stepkids. So it'll be a blast. Love we're going to have a lot of fun. And I think ours is going to be a little bit more traditional, which my son, he may get a little peeved because we don't have the rice and the gravy. So I think I'm going to have to go buy, find the right rice that my mom would use so that my youngest is,
is
fine.
Absolutely.
Thanksgiving. Yeah. All right. So this is a great week for everybody. If you're celebrating with your family and historically also a great week for wrestling, which is actually kind of cool because Survivor Series is at the end of this week. Only, you know, back when we were younger, Survivor Series was either Thanksgiving night or the next day. And then, you know, they changed it up after a little while. But it's kind of cool that Survivor Series this year is only 2 days after Thanksgiving. So it almost kind of feels like back in the day.
I would love for them to do a Thanksgiving episode of Survivor Series. You know what could top this even more? If this show was on at 12 in the afternoon on a Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, totally.
That way.
Totally.
That way I would enjoy it even more than having to stay up till midnight watching wrestling.
All right. We'll do a preview of Survivor Series here in a little bit, second half of the show. But before we get to Full Gear and all the stuff going on with AEW, we do have an ad here that we think that the viewers and the listeners may enjoy. So let me send it to the pitch man, Andrew Zarian.
You know, Thanksgiving is here, and sometimes you need to take the edge off a little bit of your day. It's very stressful. And that's why I'm pleased to have Nirvana CBD as our sponsor today on the show. NirvanaCBD.com. Experience the Nirvana CBD difference. Enjoy the broad spectrum of CBD and the Nirvana CBD difference. You know, I'm gonna tell you guys a little bit something. You know, I like to partake a little bit. And, you know, sometimes other stuff is too much. But for CBD, like, I use CBD for joint pain. I regularly. You know, you guys know I fractured my hip over the summer. Not fun. And I very much relied on CBD to kind of assist with the pain relief. It doesn't make you loopy. You know, everybody should know there's a different level of CBD that you should take depending on your size, depending on your weight, depending on your body. So there's not a one-stop solution to this. But at the Nirvana CBD, you get very high-quality CBD. They also have CBD for animals, which is fantastic for your dogs. When I went on there, because, you know, I've had dogs my whole life and they suffer from a lot of joint pain. And my previous dog was, you know, he had a lot of health issues. He had hip dysplasia, and we would give him CBD regularly to take the pain off. They have topical CBD, soft gel, and gummies, a whole lot more over at NirvanaCBD.com. I want to thank Nirvana CBD for supporting. We're live, pal.
Awesome. Great read. Pitch man, that's why you get paid the big bucks. All right, let's talk about Full Gear. And also shout out to super producer Suncast there with the he put that logo up. I think we gave him what, 10 minutes before the show started, and he got it up.
So dude, he's the best
super producer. Yes. Okay, let's talk about Full Gear. Pay-per-view Saturday night. It was an old school pay-per-view night for me, because, you know, usually I'm either at these AEW pay-per-views or I'm watching at Dave's house. But instead, you know, Dave's on vacation. Everybody can hear on Wrestling Observer Radio. He's back to the phone. We just had a night where we're like, hey, friends, going to get together. My place, bought the pay-per-view on Bleacher Report. We got DoorDash. We had a couple nice of adult beverages, you know, in the house. Very, you know, we're no one was driving for 4 hours, because that's the AEW pay-per-view length. If you have a drink in the first 10 minutes of the show, you're completely sobered by the end of the pay-per-view. Yeah. So I thought it was a pretty good show. It was going into that show based off of last week's Dynamite. I was kind of bummed out. I was like, man, I'm not feeling it for this show. But I think they did a really good job with that show. Overall, what were your, you know, were you happy with it? Did you enjoy the show overall and feel that it was a good representation of AEW?
Yeah, I think overall it was a solid show. Not a perfect show. You know, if you're going to compare, and I bring this up, right? All Out 2021.
The best show of all time.
The best show. Yeah, like, that's their best show, right? They best show of all time. So how do you compare it to that? Obviously, it wasn't that show. I was also at that event, so my point of view is a little skewed. But, you know, it was a solid show. I enjoyed it top to bottom. There wasn't anything I really disliked or I was like, oh, I can't believe they put that on the card. You know, it was a solid, solid show. Maybe a little too long.
Yeah. That's kind of par for the course, right? They only do four of these, or they did five this year because of Forbidden Door. And I think Tony leans towards A, I've been building to all these matches, and B, the fan, you know, I don't kill them with a show every month, and thus, you know, we want to give them as much quality as possible, which I totally get, though we are a little bit more conditioned for a 3-hour show than a 4-hour show, unless you're a big fan of New Japan pay-per-views, which sometimes, especially the Tokyo Dome, will even lean further. But I get it. I completely understand. The thing that's kind of hard, and this is why All Out, we always harken back to that show. This is why that show was so special, is because sometimes the crowd can get lost a little bit. They can sit on their hands. They've been there for a while. And in All Out, they had so many great surprises that they were able to keep the crowd energy up. And you can't do that for every show. And this one, you know, this one was okay. There were a couple times in the middle of the show where you're like, okay, this crowd is a little tired. I'm not sure that the main event was perfect for what they wanted. But I still thought it was good. And I want to get your thoughts on, you know, what your favorite match or your favorite moment was. Mine is going to be a little bit different. Because I think we saw the genesis of what is going to become the adult version of Jungle Boy Jack Perry. That was, I don't know if it was his best match, but it was his most believable match from the perspective of this guy can actually become a main eventer.
Well, and they told a story.
It was a great story. He himself, I think he took it to the next level in this match. Him and Luchador, he told the story of how they've been friends ever since he was a little kid, because he's been training for wrestling since he was 10 years old.
Yeah.
So there's a natural chemistry there for them. But man, and then the post scrum, why do they call it a scrum? It's not a scrum. It's a press conference. He got up there and sort of delivered his conversational stuff. Like we watch him try and do these promos sometimes, and he's trying to find the emotion, and he's trying to, like, you know, raise his voice and show fire. And he went in this press conference, and he was so conversational. I was like, man, that's the kid who is growing up to become, you know, whatever he's going to become right in front of our eyes. And for the first time, I sort of saw the charisma that his dad had in him in this press conference. Like I really saw it. I was like, God, this guy, you know, he's growing up. He's not just a kid anymore. He had a really good match. And now I think he's kind of believable in that upper mid card. And I want to see them tell that story, right? He's got to win some singles titles, and maybe it's a 2 or 3 year program for him to kind of go up and up and up. But man, I really, really, really thought Jack Perry, and we got to give it up for JR for figuring this out on day one. The Jungle Boy thing was never going to be the end game for him. And I know Tony Khan tried to say, well, what about the Nature Boy? Completely different. That whole thing is completely different. But Jack Perry, I think, is going to be something. And this was the first time that I saw it in a main event style match, even though it opened the pay-per-view. But man, I thought he was really, really good on Saturday.
I thought he was great. To touch on that Tony Khan thing, I agree with you. It's not a comparison to like the Nature Boy, because the Nature Boy was a playboy. That was the whole point of the character, right?
Yeah.
He was this playboy type. Buddy Rogers, too. The whole look, he was put together. Jungle Boy was Tarzan. He was Tarzan Boy, right?
Yeah, and he's a little kid, and that's why it worked.
A kid. But you know what's funny? Like, he's putting on some size.
Yeah.
His face is changing. You know, his demeanor is changing. A lot of this really comes down to just giving it time. And he's one of these guys that there's such an upside. You look at him, you're like, oh man, look at him. He's a heartthrob. You look at this guy. He has the total package. It's just he needs time on national TV, and he needs to get comfortable. You know, fight or flight is a real thing. Someone like MJF is always in fight. He's never in flight at all. There is no... there is no denying the natural ability MJF has to just shoot the shit and just be the character easily. It comes very natural to him. That is not true for 99% of people that enter the business. You know, Jungle Boy, he is a work in progress, and it's an amazing work in progress. I'm not taking it away. The guy is TV ready. He's complete. I think this transcended him into a different level. And you're absolutely right. JR was 100% right from the beginning to start calling him Jack Perry, because how much longer is he going to be Jungle Boy? You need another identity.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And look, the Jungle Boy thing was fine, right? For the beginning as an introduction. And I still think it probably has a little bit of legs here. But once he does transition into a main eventer, like he probably does have to lose it because of it's just a limiting thing. Like you said, Tarzan Boy. What were some of the favorite moments for you on Saturday?
That was a great match. Love that the Elite came back. I very much enjoyed the ROH four-way. That was fun. The main event, obviously. Those were really the standouts for me. More than anything else, it was overall a solid show. You know, Paige's return was interesting. If you want to, can you jump to that, or you want to go through
the
card?
No, go for it. Go for okay. it. I don't want to go through all the matches, but talk about the Paige thing.
I saw the criticism that was out there for Paige. I didn't see, I didn't feel like she was as rusty as you would first, you know, and this is why I'm saying this. It was late and I was busy with other things. I kind of was in and out on that match. So I read Twitter before I saw the full match. I was watching it, but I wasn't really paying attention. When I went back on Sunday morning to rewatch the match, I did not see what everybody was complaining about. I mean, I get it. She wasn't going 100 miles an hour. She wasn't at 100%, but she put on a pretty solid match for someone that's 5 years out with a neck injury and career ending injury and went through essentially everything she went through. I thought she did a great job.
I agree with you. And I think there was a built in drama. And to me, the feud was the feud. I thought their promo.
Soraya. I'm so sorry. Soraya.
You're right. It was a little bit backwards because Britt was cutting the babyface promos and Soraya was coming off as a little bit of a prima donna and a heel. But that match, the thing that worked for me in that match, and it happens a lot in wrestling when your favorite wrestler or a wrestler that you really like, or in, just any wrestler, if you respect what those folks do, coming back from an injury, there's always like this added emotion. You're always really worried about what's going to happen. When Bryan Danielson came back after being out for so long and they had that match at WrestleMania with Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon against, was it Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens? Like that, like you're just like, oh my gosh, like I hope he's okay. And so there's this little drama in the match that maybe the casual fan doesn't really care about, but because we're close to this, it's in there. And I felt the same way about the Soraya match. I thought, this is the one that she just had to get it over with. Yeah. She had to come out of this thing clean. She had to be fine. And then you move on. Now, I don't know if I liked the creative I think it would have been more powerful if she would have actually lost the match because she'd been gone for so long. But they did it the way that they did it. But I really, really liked the sort of the real life drama that was added to that match if you were paying closely attention.
Yeah, I mean, the creative, there's always room to debate, you know, whether or not they should have gone the direction they did, who should have won, who should have been the heel. But as far as overall performance, you know, somebody at WWE texted me and he goes, this was a really great NXT 2013 main event. That's how they said it to me. I'm like, you know what? Kind of has a point there, right?
Yeah.
The style was very similar to that. A lot of quick pin, going for the pin immediately after moves. It was just get the ball rolling a little bit. Let's get it going, and then she'll be okay. I'm excited to see what else she's gonna do. You know, life's hard, man, and she had a hard couple of years for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeez, like she went through hell, right?
Yeah,
and you know, some people will say, oh, you know, you shouldn't feel sorry. No, like anybody who goes through the hell that she went through, man, you have sympathy for them. What this match was missing was a Natalya Neidhart to make sure that the thing was tight. You remember, you mentioning NXT reminded me of this. A Natalya against Charlotte, right? Charlotte's like official coming out party. Charlotte looks great, and it's because of Natalya. And that we kind of needed that, like, for this match, like Saraya versus a Natalya. AEW doesn't really have a Natalya on their roster, but other, you know, I thought the match was completely fine. And there was that, like I said, that built-in emotion. What about the women's title match? Jamie Hayter, Toni Storm. We finally saw Jamie Hayter crowned. This has kind of been coming. We've seen the fans really, really take to her. And now they can tell whatever story, or at least the beginning of this story with Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. But what did you think of that? What did you think of the crowning of Jamie Hayter?
I think, you know what? I think it was interesting because remember, wasn't the story that they should have made an audible at the last show? At the last time she challenged for the title? Wasn't that the argument?
It was.
Everybody was saying.
Wasn't it? Yeah. They did a multi-woman match, right?
Yeah, and then the crowd got really behind her, and then they were like flat when she didn't win.
Right.
I'm curious to see what they do. I hope this isn't like another Wardlow thing where, you know, people are really behind her, she gets the title, and then they really don't know where to go beyond that. You also have, you know, Toni Storm, where are you going to go with Tony? You also have the Thunder Rosa situation where this is an interim title and not a main title. You have Britt Baker. There's enough creative brew in there on the women's side now that I think they, and then inject, you know, Saraya in here somehow.
Saraya, yeah, absolutely.
You have something moving. The match was fine. I thought the women's match was really good. I think if you were going to criticize anything, it would probably be the Jade and Nyla match, but they kept it short enough. You know, it was a short match. They both got their finishers. They both looked strong. And then, you know, now that's over. So you're moving forward. I think the thing that affected that feud, it was the feud and not the match, because the match was flat, because the feud just went on forever and it made no sense. you have my title. I'm going to sit. The
my
sitting in the ring that you never did.
My favorite part is that I think it was on the Tony Khan call during the week. I don't know, Thursday or whenever they did that call, with all the press call. And he said something about Tony Schiavone helping him with creative, and then went on to give credit for Tony Schiavone for this Jade and Nyla idea. And I was like, wait, credit? Because this is not good. So I kind of wonder if he was like,
just shift saying, the blame.
That wasn't really my idea. It was Tony's idea. I thought that was kind of interesting.
I guess so. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, Nyla and Jade, I wanted to see a little bit more Brock Lesnar, Bill Goldberg, like explosive, just boom, 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 boom. You know, they're still trying to get Jade to learn how to sell and all those things. But she's so big. It's kind of like the Undertaker having to sell. I remember I used to listen to Austin's podcast all the time, and he was talking about how whenever he would face the Undertaker, because the Undertaker was so big and so tall, the way that he would sell is he would sell on the move. So he wouldn't sell and go down to the mat. He would sell by getting punched and then going into the ropes, then getting punched and then going into the corner, and Austin's just keeping up with him and keeping it going. And I understand, because, you know, Jade is so big that except for when she faces someone like Nyla, there's only, you know, they don't have very many women of that size. It's going to look weird, right, for her to sell against these smaller women.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. You know, I still enjoy the character. The matches are what they are, but she still has that presentation. She's still, you see her out there in social media. They're doing something with Bow Wow, of all people, who, you know, he did the, you know, he wanted to shoot his shot on Twitter, which I'm sure is part of this whole storyline that they've been telling. But what do you think
call
about Bow
little.
Wow? No, no.
Don't call him little. He gets very upset if you call him little Bow Wow.
Have you heard his story? Have you heard his story about how he became little Bow Wow?
Somebody discovered him, or he's somebody's kid? Is that?
It was Snoop.
Was it Snoop?
He went to a Snoop concert, and Snoop brought him on stage because he was like a little kid who could rap, and Snoop called him Lil Bow Wow.
No, there you go.
Snoop Dogg.
what a blessing,
Uncle
right?
Snoop.
He got the Nature Boy.
He got the Nature
Boy blessing. Another thing that stood out to me, and it was only because at that time I was feeling really sick on Saturday, and I ended up taking a Benadryl so I could go to sleep, and just when that Benadryl kicked in, I hear My World playing over and over again. And I went through this TNA days. It was a vortex I was in. Aces and Eights showing up in front of me. Yeah. Hogan and Bischoff. Six-sided ring. Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
That's all I could see. I got to tell you, though, man, he looks unbelievable.
Jeff Jarrett.
Jeff Jarrett looks unbelievable. And it just shows you, if Nickelback in 2022 could be considered cool older music, Jeff Jarrett could come back and dominate the pro wrestling world. This guy has had a hell of a year. Still throws one of the best punches currently in the business. And he looked great, you know? I thought it was bizarrely interesting that we had Jeff Jarrett wrestle on an AEW show.
And we're going to see him again, probably, right? One-on-one with Sting. They didn't even touch, did they? So it seems like they're going to be in a match at some point, which could be, you know, maybe this culmination Jeff Jarrett singles match at some pay-per-view with Sting.
Yeah. I you know what? I don't mind seeing it, to be honest. It doesn't take away from anything. It's a nice attraction match. It's not Jeff Jarrett's not facing Jon Moxley for the world title, which, you know what?
No.
If he did, I kind of would want to see that also.
You could do that on TV.
I don't have the anti-nostalgia stuff that a lot of people have. I understand. Like, if it's like, if you're watching Bill Goldberg on national TV wrestle Jeff Jarrett every week, or you're having, you know, an older person in a main position, that's fine. But if you're doing this, you know what? It pops, you know, the older fans, and it works.
Yeah, he's not the champ, right? As long as he's not dominating and beating up. As long as he's not beating up, like, all the young and up-and-coming talent, I think we're fine. Yeah. Okay, so what did you think about the way that the Elite were brought back in their match against the Death Triangle, which they surprisingly lost, which we now learn is setting up a best of seven in which Kenny Omega is going to miss the Seattle Dynamite because he's going to go back to New Japan and face Will Ospreay in a ridiculously crazy match that I'm definitely
for the US
taking
title.
The day off. Taking the day off and so I can stay up for and watch live.
Yeah, wild. I'm excited for that match, by the way. You know, one thing that stood out, first of all, the entrance was awesome, you know. Great entrance. That crowd was so happy to see those three guys come back. The FCM Punk chant was fascinating. The Colt Cabana chant was fascinating. But one thing really stood out in this match, and it is how much better Kenny Omega is than 99% of the people in professional wrestling. This guy is so good. Everything is just so crisp and fast and just remarkable. He looked great.
Time off.
He was all jacked up too. That time off did him good. He got big.
I think it was good for, you know, those three guys don't want it to happen in that way where they're just suspended for something outside of the ring. But I feel like it did good for them, you know, from a physical standpoint. They didn't have to take bumps, you know, for a couple months there. Hopefully that they gain some sort of, mental freshness as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kenny
looked
great. He looked like that's the best shape he's been in a long time.
2017 physically, you know, I think it was bigger than he's ever been, like size wise, you know, mass wise. But, you know, he hasn't looked that crisp since probably 2017, 2018. I mean, 2018, he was banged up for sure. But
yeah.
He was running hard. Great, man. It was, and it made me, I'm a wrestling fan at the end of the day, and you want to see guys like him. The one thing I really want is once this best of the seven series is over, which I'm not too crazy about. I don't know how many times they could have the style.
It seemed a little shoehorned to me, right?
A little bit.
I don't understand why there's a reason for it other than to have great matches, which, you know, I think I'm fine with that, but from a storyline perspective, like, it's not like Kenny Omega got hit with the hammer and was like pissed off backstage going like, we need to do this fair and square, best of seven, you know, or whatever. Like, it was just all of a sudden just announced. Like, someone made a decision. Commissioner Shawn Michaels or somebody?
Commissioner Shawn Michaels called Tony Khan and said, please, you need to make this a best of series, Tony. No, you know what my issue with that is? Generally, you do that, like you said, when you want like top tier five star style matches on your TV every week. They generally could get that with any match because of the sheer amount of talent that they have and the style of wrestling that they do. So it's not, you know, having Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit on SmackDown have a series of matches. You needed that because guys were not on that level.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's so many people on that level on that roster that could have that match. Whatever, I'm sure it's going to be fine, but I really want to see, and something that we've learned in AEW is you don't want to give a lot of these matches too much time preventing them from happening, right? Like CM Punk. We never got Kenny Omega CM Punk.
Nope.
Can you imagine that? I mean, I'm sure Tony had it in the making somehow.
Oh, yeah.
We never got that match.
It's probably going to be... It was probably going to be 2023, right? There was
could have been a stadium show.
Yeah,
it could have been a stadium show. You never got Danielson and Punk. So I think now, you know, use this opportunity to give us that one off, especially in a contract year when you're building your TV and you're trying to recover from this. You know, I think this was a rough year for them for sure.
Yes,
Their TV was fine. Their matches were fine. Like there wasn't a fundamental issue, but they had a lot of backstage issues that kind of took over their product. You know, 800,000 viewers on a go home show, right? 840,000, whatever it was. My personal belief, a lot of the personal stuff that's happened over the last, you know, since May, played a part in this for sure.
Fatigue.
You know, there are people that are like, I got fatigued from it, for sure.
Yeah.
100%. I got fatigued because it was so much nonsense that you're talking about. You're no longer talking about the wrestling. You're talking about, you know, muffins.
Yeah.
Which yes. I spoke about muffins almost every single episode. So.
All right. Last thing before we move on to Survivor Series. I want to talk about the match, MJF and Moxley, and the creative decision to have William Regal turn on John and give Max the brass knuckles to knock out Moxley to win the match. I thought the match in of itself was, I wouldn't consider it a great match. I thought it was good. Really, really solid match. I don't know. There was something about it. Something, maybe it's just between the two of these guys, chemistry wise, that they're not the greatest fit together. I like Moxley against other people, and I like MJF against other people. But what I hope coming out of this is that this does kind of anoint MJF as like the next guy. And this is a great opportunity for them now. Doing it as a heel rather than a babyface is an interesting decision. I would imagine MJF probably wants to continue to be heel because he's so good at it. But if this is going to be the next guy and maybe the guy that's going to take your business up and to the right, I don't know about him doing it as a heel. Maybe it'll completely work because the fans get behind him anyways. But what do you think about MJF as the chosen one here? Because they do need, like you mentioned, contract year. They do need some momentum, and they've flatlined in recent months. So is this an opportunity? Are we going to see business pick up a little bit from MJF being champion?
I don't know. You know, he's very well liked. He's fantastic. I don't know what's going to happen. It depends on the creative, right? Like, who's chasing this guy? Because now you need someone that's going to chase him, but he's so well liked as a heel. Will it work?
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And the other thing is, you know, as a heel champion, he's going to have the opportunity to face all of these great baby faces like Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson. Gosh, I can't believe I'm still doing Daniel Bryan in 2022 here. You know, he's got Danielson. He's got Eddie Kingston, who you could put him up against, who's a baby face that's just beloved. You know, lots of really strong baby faces, but is the wrestling on his end going to be good enough to be the heel champion who keeps winning by hook or by crook? That's to be determined. And I think the pace and the rhythm of all these upcoming title matches that he'll eventually have will be very interesting. I think it would be smart to put him with Bryan Danielson like immediately, because that's the best wrestler you have on the roster, right? As a babyface in this format. Because, you know, it's not like MJF is a finished product in any way, but he's a young guy who is hot and his character's on fire. And I hope that helps with business.
Well, here's the other thing, right? Let's look at this. He doesn't wrestle really on TV. Rarely. So we got used to Jon Moxley defending that title regularly and wrestling every week. Is MJF going to continue that? Is he going to wrestle regularly? Almost every champion that they've had has wrestled regularly, including Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to break something that's added to his allure, and that's the fact that you don't really get to see him wrestle too often. Are you now going to go back to him wrestling every week or every other week, or are you going to continue on where having him as a main attraction once a month, if that?
Yes. I would imagine that he probably will cut promos every week, and I would say he'll probably be doing tag. I could see him doing tag matches more so than I could see him doing singles matches like Moxley was doing. I think that's a better usage of him, so you don't burn him out too.
Yeah, his build was weird too, with the way that he won the chip with Soakley's guys. They're involved, they're affiliated, they're not really affiliated, and then the turn with Regal. I think the creative was a little wonky, but everything was from May on. So I'm hoping that this is some sort of reset period for them.
All right, before we preview Survivor Series this weekend, I have one request of you, which is Dynamite, Rampage, and Revolution are in the Bay Area. Are we going to get an Andrew Zarian sighting possibly in the Bay Area for those shows? Because if so, this is my home. This is Meltzer's home. We got to host, you know, we're going to host you, man. It's going to be fun. But is there a possibility that this could technically happen? Could Andrew Zarian be in the Bay?
I've been thinking about it. I absolutely love California. I love the Bay Area. I used to travel to California like 8 times a year. So it's something I very much enjoy, going to the West Coast. I haven't really gone since the world shut down. So I'm looking for an excuse to go. So maybe if we could figure it out, I would love to go.
That would be awesome. It would be a blast. I've decided I'm taking off from work, from my shoot job, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and I'm going to do all of it. I'm going to do Dynamite, I'm going to do Rampage, and obviously the pay-per-view, which is going to be at Chase. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a really, really fun week. All right, let's talk about Survivor Series. So it sounds like the fifth member of the Babyface War Games team is going to be Becky Lynch. What do you think of the idea of not announcing that on the go-home Raw?
So I'm actually very surprised, because when she was hurt, when she initially got hurt and she took some time off, immediately I was told that she'd be coming back around Survivor Series. So I always went into it thinking like, okay, they're going to go, she's going to come back and she's going to be on the team. Maybe they'll announce it on SmackDown?
I guess in a sense, they don't have pay-per-views to sell, so you don't necessarily have to do it. They're just trying to get people to tune in, which, you know, Peacock has more subscribers than ever, and the product is seemingly hot for Peacock. So maybe that's in the calculus. It's like, people are going to come, and we want, when they tune in, we want them to see this special moment, which makes more sense to me on a streaming show than it does on a pay-per-view, where you kind of have to build for the buys.
So they are revealing it on SmackDown, by the way.
Oh, they are?
They are going to reveal. Yeah, they're going to reveal who it is on SmackDown. I've always been under the impression that it's Becky. I'd be happily surprised if it's not. A lot of people thought it was Candice, right? That was initially what people were saying. But Becky makes the most sense in that match. What if it's Charlotte?
I agree.
Can't you do something with Charlotte?
Charlotte's a weird fit for the babyface team, don't you think?
I mean, she's always, whenever, she becomes a babyface and it becomes really weird every time because she's such a natural heel.
People thought it could have been Beth.
It could have been
back.
Beth, yeah.
But I think
Becky would be the big one.
Big pound, you know, the bang for your buck right there. Becky Lynch, I think that's the best one they can do. So I'm happy. Unless you had a Sasha and Naomi thing, which they never really have teased that. So I think as of how it stands, that's probably the best one. And I'm excited. Who doesn't like Becky Lynch as a babyface?
No, she's fantastic. See, I'm losing my voice now. You see what's happening? I lost my voice already.
All right. So we have two War Games matches. Now I want to get your thoughts on this, because there was a quote that I think Triple H made when he was specifically talking about Hell in a Cell. And he was saying, Hell in a Cell we don't need to have a pay-per-view that's called Hell in a Cell. We can build to Hell in a Cell matches and then have those matches. And so I thought, I was like, wow, you know, Triple H is actually thinking like us as fans. We're like, why do we have to have a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view? Why do we have to have a Tables, Ladders, and Chairs pay-per-view? Why don't you just create those matches when it needs to happen? Because or else we just get, you know, all these last man standing matches all the time. But this is kind of, it's not really his baby, but it was his NXT idea. I feel like these War Games matches kind of got shoehorned without them be really being ready to have War Games matches. They kind of got shoehorned in the last 3 weeks of this pay-per-view. But that being said, I'm very interested to see how WWE main roster is going to do the War Games match.
And will it be the same War Games?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to have a cage on the top.
Yeah, so I don't know what if it's the same structure, if it's not. I think it's a very cool concept. I've always liked War Game, but I came from that generation where War Games was a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I always found it interesting that Vince did not want to do the double ring. He never really liked that aesthetic.
Yep.
So we're going to see. Maybe, you know, this may be the moment that people, it just doesn't translate on that TV, which I can't see it not because it worked in NXT so well. But it's a cool concept, especially if you're a kid. You know, then think about who they're marketing this to, right? It's Mattel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they have their things in place, but it's a great holiday item. My God, you're selling two rings and the cage and two cages. I think it's always impressive, especially if you're a kid, to see something so out of the norm like that. That's why the Royal Rumble always worked. That's why the original concept of Survivor Series worked. You know, a steel cage match, that big blue steel cage, it always worked because it was out of the norm. This is one of those things. It's just a matter of, okay, how is it going to translate on TV? I think it's going to work. I believe this is a great addition to the traditional Survivor Series, which is kind of, they've done everything they could. What else can they do with Survivor Series? They've done the brand versus brand. They've done the dream matchups. They've done all of that. So, I mean, this is just another layer to revitalize this top four, top five pay-per-view that really, it's the bottom one. Or that traditional pay-per-view list. You know, there's a lot of variables here. I look at it as they have an opportunity to do something really cool here with a concept that, you know, we recognize, other people haven't. So what do you think they do?
Yeah, no, I am. Here's how I would have done it. I know they do it with the two Royal Rumbles, with the two Money in the Bank matches. You have a men's match and a women's match. I would have, whatever one you think needs the cage or that you have the best creative for to get the cage involved, put that one in the War Games. And the other one, make a traditional elimination style Survivor Series match. Because when you have the two War Games matches, I imagine the women's match is going to lead the show off, and then the men's match will be the main event of the show, of the PLE. I would prefer the women's match to just be an elimination style match, or even the men's match, because you could do some really, really fun stuff with Owens and Sammy facing off, or Roman and Owens facing off. The problem with having the two cage matches is now you have to produce those matches so that you're not copying the same spots, and you're making sure that you don't repeat things, and the heat, you can't repeat the heat the same way, and then we're going to get the goofy thing where of course the baby faces are going to lose both advantages, because you can't do that match with the psychology flipped upside down. So I would have just had one match as War Games as the main event and gone elimination style with the other one.
Yeah,
because they don't have an elimination style match otherwise. That this, they don't have this, the traditional Survivor Series match, at least yet. They may add one, but as of the card today, right now, I don't believe we have an elimination match.
And does one War Games happening before the other one affect it, since this is theoretically the first time ever in WWE?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of be burned out on the War Games concept by the main event match, I'm sure. Unless somehow, like, you know, they can be very creative with it and show us things that we've never seen before. But I don't know. It seems like a little bit of a tough one. I think this year will be fine. I think the concept is new. It'll be good. People want it. But, you know, repeating years, I would flip that around a little bit. I love the traditional elimination style Survivor Series matches, you know, myself. I would be more really excited good for ones. That. Yeah.
In like,
you put the
in
really like good workers in there.
I mean, the moment Shinsuke Nakamura and Triple H going face to face, when the hell would that ever happen? Keith Lee and Roman Reigns going face to face, when the hell would that happen? You know, at the time when that happened.
Yeah.
I thought those were really cool. AJ was in the mix. You know, you got to see a lot of these very cool moments happen, but you really, that you only have that opportunity every now and then. You can't do that every year, especially, and we saw what happened with Survivor Series. They've been trying to tinker with the concept for years. They had the Deadly Games tournament in 1998. That was
just
a very
finished
much a
watching
different,
that.
You know, that's one of my favorite shows, and not because the wrestling was great, because the story, it told an interesting story, and the theme song. Jim Johnson's Deadly Games theme song was by far one of the best that he's ever done.
Yeah, we just covered that on the Fight Game Media Patreon show that me and John LaRocca do. We've been covering 98 Raw, and we just did that show. It was fun to watch back and see this.
It was fun.
The rise of The Rock. It was cool.
Yeah, very fun.
All right, let's look at some of these matches here. So we have the Women's War Games match, Bianca, Alexa, Asuka, Mia Yim's new name, Meechan. Is that the new name?
Meechan, but she may have gone back to Mia Yim.
Really?
Somebody posted, let's see, WWE.com. Let's go under their superstars list and see what happened, because somebody sent me earlier that she was listed as Meechan, and now she's listed as Mia Yim.
Interesting. Huh.
Yeah, so
I wonder why. I wonder why the back and forth.
So I'm trying to find it now. I'm trying to see if there's an update here, but I have no way of. Oh, it is alphabetical. Great. Thank God. Makes it easy. I'm at the K's here while we do this. Mr. McMahon is still on this list.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So maybe. Oh, Mia Yim. Yeah, she's under Mia Yim.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I guess we'll see where they go with that. I thought it was an interesting twist to bring her back as Mia Yim and then going, oh, here's my nickname that people call me, and then changing that to be her name. I thought, you know, maybe from her own personal, you know, branding of her name, maybe that they need to do something different. We'll see what they eventually fall back on. But that's interesting. Okay, so in addition to Mia Yim, a.k.a. Meechan, and then who we believe to be Becky Lynch against Damage Control, Bailey, Dakota, and Io, Nikki Cross, and Rhea Ripley. Now, my hope is coming out of this match that even though the original confrontation, the original conflict was between Bianca, Alexis, and Asuka and Damage Control, I feel like the person who they are building to become a star out of this is Rhea Ripley. Now, with Becky coming back, you know, they can build to something pretty big for WrestleMania, I think, whether it is Bianca against Rhea or Becky against Rhea. I know they may be thinking Becky against Ronda for WrestleMania, but I think we should see kind of like a little teaser of one of the WrestleMania matches, because Rhea has been on fire. Bianca's fantastic. Becky is obviously great. So I want to see something between, you know, those three women that feels big coming out of this match.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's Becky. I'm hoping it's Becky. But, you know, there's also that Sasha thing that's still looming, right?
Sure, sure.
We don't know what's happening there. Everybody's speculating. It's going to be, it could be Sasha, it could be Beth. I'm hoping it's not either one of those.
Yeah, you know, I bet, like we said, Becky's the biggest bang for the buck. So yeah, if she shows up, the crowd in the opening match, crowd's going to go crazy. They're going to want her to be there. They're going to be expecting her to be there. And then when she shows up, if it is her, then it's going to be a giant, giant pop. So, okay. So the next match we'll talk about here is the brawling, or actually, we'll save that one for the last. Ronda Rousey against Shotzi. This has been like a weird build. I know Shotzi beat Shayna on SmackDown. Are they doing something with Ronda and Shayna? Like, they're together as this, like, these two heels. Are we going to see them one turn on the other? Is Shayna going to get a title match? Like, what's going to happen here in this storyline, you think?
So back in January, I was told after Mania, they were going to be teamed up together. Mm-hmm. So obviously got delayed, you know, it just happened. I think this is to rehab Shayna more than anything else. Because Think about the Shayna Baszler of NXT compared to today. Different Shayna Baszler. She's viewed very differently as far as, you know, the audience goes more than anything else. So this is a rehab for her more than anything else. And eventually you'll lead down that story of Shayna and Ronda. I know they would love to work together. How could they not want to? You know, they were roommates. Sure. They started wrestling together. Interesting. I don't dislike it. I think this Ronda run, however, has been a little lacklustered. It's not the same Ronda Rousey. The allure is not the same. And you have to do something to make it mean something again. Because I'm going to be honest. I turned SmackDown on. I'm watching Ronda. I don't have to put it on because Ronda's on. And before, that's what it was. I had to put it on. Oh, my gosh. Ronda's on this week. Okay, let's see what she's going to do.
Yes. So we also have AJ Styles versus Finn Balor in a singles match. That should be a lot of fun. I hope that they get to have the style of match that you know, that they want to have, right? Like, these are two guys who could go, and if you allowed them to wrestle, you know, maybe a little bit more of like a New Japan Pro Wrestling style of match, you're talking about one of the best matches of the year. I don't know if they'll be able to do that, or if that's what they want out of that match. But I'm looking forward to that. More so than just about any other match on this show, except for the War Games matches.
Interesting. Yeah. Another one. I think the card overall, I'm trying to pull it up here and it crashed on me. The card overall is solid, you know, and, you know, we saw how well this sold too. That's the other thing. A Survivor Series selling out that quickly. Sorry, I had to sneeze. I hit the dump button right there.
I saw. Yeah, that was nobody good else, timing. Nobody,
you could see it, but you can't hear it.
That was good timing. The people listening to the podcast, they would have never known if you just didn't mention.
They would have never known. Pull back the curtain a little bit here.
Wait, what about the Royal Rumble? Look at that gate. Like, these pay per views.
Oh my
gosh, these big shows are hot right now. Yeah,
5 million for Rumble, and you know they better do something big. I know that's. That's what I'm hearing. They're doing something big at a Rumble. Cody, yeah. They could do Cody. They could start the Dwayne stuff if that's still happening. I know they really want the Dwayne stuff to happen. I just had a conversation with someone yesterday. Monday was yesterday. Yeah, Monday. They want it to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be big. He's a much bigger celebrity than he has been in since he, you know, has been working with WWE.
Imagine he comes in and wins the Rumble. Imagine that's what they do. And you know who he eliminates? Cody.
Oh my God.
Big clothesline to Cody right over the top. He comes in at number 30, just cleans house, rock bottom, people's That'd elbow, does the whole eyebrow, and he wins. You know what? He's a heel then. He's getting booed.
Yeah. And then we have Seth Rollins against Bobby Lashley against Austin Theory. What do you think about the way that they kind of tore down Austin Theory to build him back up? I'm not sure I'm a fan of the way that they did it. I thought the cash-in was one of the most idiotic things that I've ever seen, which says a lot, right? Which says a lot, but we're supposed to be in this Triple H world where things are supposed to make sense. And I still think it's, no matter what happens, I still think it was a dumb way to do it. But are you believing in the Austin Theory thing? Because naturally, if you're trying to make him the next guy, maybe he does win this match, but I don't sense that, like, unless it's like in this like really backhanded banana peel way. But Seth is pretty hot right now, and he's really made that US championship something. Bobby Lashley's great, of course, coming off the match with Brock. So, what do you think about this whole Austin thing as far as, you know, maybe are they building him up or is it not working?
I think the tearing him down and rebuilding him, very positive on this. I've seen him wrestle since he was 20 years old. He used to wrestle for Evolve, and I used to go all the time. And immediately when you see him, even like 2017 even, you knew that there was something there for him, for sure. He has something. I don't think they did a great job on introducing him. He was part of the stable in NXT. He comes up. Now he's Vince McMahon's son. Vince is gone. He wins the Money in the Bank. So I think the rebuilding, great idea. The way they took that Money in the Bank, really Money in the Bank off of him, really stupid. Really dumb.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least he should have challenged Roman. And maybe, you know what would have made even more sense? If he challenged Roman and Roman squashed him and now you rebuild him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead, he challenged for a title that, you know, why would you? This is your world championship opportunity as a 25-year-old. You don't get that opportunity ever. Why are you not cashing it in on the man?
Yeah, it was silly. It was really silly. Okay, the main event of this show, the Brawling Brutes, Drew McIntyre, and as we saw on SmackDown, Kevin Owens against the Bloodline. Roman, Solo, Sammy, and the Usos. I mean, you know, you talk about must-see TV when it comes to WWE. I'm sure, you know, this is sort of why their YouTube stuff works really well, is they, you know, if you didn't get to watch SmackDown on Friday night because there are stuff going on, you have 5 minutes to watch a YouTube video of whatever the next thing the Bloodline is doing, right? They've been so good, and just a main event act, and it's just been incredible to see them. What do you think about this match, and who would you actually have win this match?
The Bloodline. I would have them win.
Okay. I have a different answer.
Yeah, you do? Good. Give me. Tell me how do you want it to play out?
Okay. Now, this is all based on if the idea is Roman versus Kevin Owens at Royal Rumble. I would have Kevin Owens pin Roman Reigns after hitting him with everything. Like in this match, you got the gimmicks, you got his finisher. I would have him hit his finisher, Roman kicks out, and then I would have him somehow finagle it to do it again, because, you know, I don't think it's very believable that Kevin Owens is going to beat Roman Reigns, so you kind of have to make it so. And who cares who wins Survivor Series, right? It's just that he's got the title, and that's the thing that matters to him most. So I would have Kevin Owens pin Roman Reigns to head into Royal Rumble.
You know, and now, you know, the story is going to be the deception of, you know, Sami Zayn and who he wants to side with and how they do. There's so much you could do there to add to it.
You could even have Sammy clock Roman, right? You could have Sammy clock Roman to cause Roman to lose.
Oh, there you go. That's a great. You know what? That's how it should end.
Yeah.
And then following SmackDown, it's the cast. You know, they're castigating him in front of a live audience as to why and how and what happened.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. Yeah.
Not castrating. That. I almost said castrating him. Very close to saying that would be that is a right out of Vince Russo's Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, that's almost what happened to Austin Theory, but not quite.
Yeah.
All right, so we're out of here. I'm sure Lance was very happy to not have to be rushed.
Do you want a little scoop? Yeah. I got a scoop here, big time scoop. I messaged Lance Storm, our buddy, and I asked him. I said, you need to find out. Okay, I'd never ask you for a thing in professional wrestling. I would never dare ask you for a scoop. What happens behind the scenes? But I need to know one thing behind the scenes. Where the hell? Where do those shoes come from? You know what I'm talking about?
Wait, what shoes?
The Invisible Hands shoes. Callis'
shoes?
I need to know. And he gave me the scoop. I know where he bought those shoes.
There you go.
Does anybody want to know?
Yeah, do you want to give out the secret? Oh.
Got him at Saks. That is the big scoop of the week.
That's a great way to end the show. A little bit of an assist from Lance before he yells at us to get off of this show.
Yes.
So
we're running late, pal.
For Andrew, I'm Double G. To everybody, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Crossing fingers that shoot jobs don't interfere.